Hello and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast with me, Beth Espy. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. This series is brought to you by the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man and also supported by the Manx Motorcycle Club, which runs the Manx Grand Prix. And our guest today is another newcomer. He was here for MGP 2025 for the first time, only in his early 20s, but really is set for great things, as so many of the people that we talk to in this series are. And he also has a very interesting nickname.
My name is Will Grant and I live in Scarborough, work at the O2 shop, currently O2's fastest racer, riding for Calton Racing this year. And I was a Manx Grand Prix newcomer.
You're known as the Sheriff, and if anybody saw you around the MGP paddock this year, you sport a rather fetching hat. How did that all start?
There's no real big story to that, to be fair. I like the way it looks, and it kind of drives a bit of attention to someone in paddock. Otherwise, everyone kind of looks the same without the levers, don't they? So it's a cool hat, really.
Do you know, that's the thing, isn't it? You need to have a bit of personality, don't you, to, like you say, grab the attention, which is so important these days when you're thinking about things like, you know, getting race fans to get behind you and also the sponsors as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it, really. So, yeah, I mean, I think I forget for trying to drive a bit of attention online and stuff. And it just kind of helps put a face to the name, you know what I mean?
Okay, and you mentioned you're O2's fastest salesman. Does that mean there's other riders within O2 as well?
No, that's exactly why I am the fastest, because no one else does it.
Well, take us back then. Where did this all start for you?
So, I mean, my dad raced. He used to race classic bikes. Obviously, we live in Scarborough, so Oliver's Mount was, you know, the big thing for him. I always wanted to do it, so I started off with, you know, typical Pee-wee and TY80 doing a bit of motocross and trials. And then, I always wanted to race, mainly just to do Scarborough, to do Oliver's Mount, because obviously living here, it's quite a big deal to us. But my dad always kind of put it off. I think he just wanted to wait and see that, you know, something I really wanted to do before invested in that, really. But yeah, I started actually classic racing on short circuits. I had a RS125 Honda. That was 1986. Did a lot of classic club and British historic racing. And then progressed into modern bikes. I had a KTM RC390. And I actually won the last ever Super Teens race with Thunder Sport before that closed down. After that, I moved on to NG Road Racing with the Ninja 400, which I still currently ride. So just been learning it from there. Did Oliver's Mount Gold Cup in 2023. That's my first ever road, and that went really well. Came with a couple top six, I believe. And then after that, we did a full year of just Oliver's Mount, really on the 400, and ended up winning the championship. So that was really good for me. And then after that, we moved on to Calton Racing. So Super Twin, and also riding my 400 at various Irish meetings. And and then the Manx.
Do you know what? What a journey so far. That's incredible. And I love the fact that your dad was just a little bit like, well, maybe just wait and see if this is something you really want to do. I'm intrigued to know what those conversations were like in the early days, because I can imagine, as a youngster who's got a burning desire to do this, watching somebody who's also doing it in the, you know, like your dad was, you were like, yeah, I am absolutely going to do it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But I didn't actually start racing until I was 16, which is, you know, quite late compared to, you know, any Spanish kids. They'll start riding at about 3 or 4 years old, don't they? But I think he wanted to, you know, really make sure it's something I wanted to do, especially the roads, because you can't go into the roads unless, you know, it's something, you know, you've always been wanting to do, because it just really won't work out.
And in terms of sort of family life generally then, did it all pretty much revolve around bikes?
Yeah, I mean, with me and my dad, I've got three brothers as well, but they're not really into bikes or cars or anything. It's all football with them. But it's more of a me and my dad thing. Obviously the whole family supports what I do and everything, but yeah, it's mainly just been watching my dad do it, and then I wanted to do it.
And where are you in the pecking order of the brothers then?
Yeah, I am the youngest. Yeah, I've got three older brothers. The oldest one now is 32, and then whittled down to me, and I'm 22.
Oh, do you know what? Everybody says the youngest has it a little bit easier. Has that been your experience, do you think?
I don't know about easier. A lot of competition. That's probably what has drove me to do something, you know, do the road racing. I like competition. It's probably years of trying to prove that I'm good at something to my brothers, I guess.
And you know what? 22 is so young still, and it's incredible what you've achieved. I mean, you talked about the win that you had last year, and that must just be such a feeling. What was that like when you realised that that championship was yours? And what were the conversations like with your dad straight after that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a dream come true to, yeah, never mind win a race around Oliver's Mount, but to actually win a championship was just something we'd always hoped for, really. Like I said, I started racing just to race Oliver's Mount. That was the goal. Then to win the championship was just cherry on top. So yeah, he was obviously very proud, and I was excited to see what happened after that.
And you know what? That's what happens, isn't it? So you have a goal, you reach that goal, and then you move on. At what point did Manx Grand Prix come into the conversation?
Yeah, so once I did all of his Manx the first time in 2023, to do the Manx or the Isle of Man in general, was definitely on the cards. We never really thought we were going to be able to do it, just because we'd seen the amount of effort that goes into it, and me and my dad would have, you know, we would have struggled with that. There's not a lot of people that we have around us, like mechanics wise or, you know, like team support. That's where Counting Racing came into play, really. That was just like our golden ticket, and it's like, right, we've got to go for it.
And was the Manx something that your dad ever wanted to do?
No, I'm not sure. I've asked him before, but he's been over and he's helped a few mates before. But yeah, my dad didn't start racing until he was like mid-30s, I believe. So he just didn't think he'd be able to get over there and take time off work and try and learn it all. I think he secretly wishes now he had done it, but yeah, he never did get the chance.
I suppose it's a difficult thing to do as well when you're kind of into that family stage of your life, isn't it? And especially if you've got, you know, children and whatever, it is difficult to try and fit everything all in. So great that you're doing it at this point then. Had you been over to watch racing over here much before you did it?
Well, me and Dad went over in December just to do a bit of homework and stuff. But before that, I'd never been over to the Isle of Man. My first experience of watching a bike go down Bray Hill was actually me behind the bars. Yeah, I've watched it on TV before, and, you know, the amount of onboards I've watched is crazy. But yeah, my first real life experience being there was me going down Bray Hill.
That is absolutely unbelievable. I suppose, I mean, you talk about Counter Racing. Just tell us first how that relationship first came about.
Yeah, so my dad being good friends with Fran for quite a while. Obviously, we knew James quite well. But yeah, just my dad being friends with him, it kind of got talking. I remember in 23 watching Dom Herbertson ride for Fran, just thinking, oh wow, if, you know, if that could be me one day, that'd just be brilliant. And yeah, we kind of got the conversation going after winning the championship. They were looking for another rider, I was looking for a good ride, and yeah, it just kind of came into fruition from that.
And we had your teammate Toby Shan on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and again, just talking about how supportive that team is. Obviously, they've got all of that experience, all of that love for this sport, and that really must make it a little bit easier at some meetings.
Yeah, well, just everywhere in general, the amount of knowledge that they've got is awesome. I never have to, you know, worry about, oh, is this right, is that right? Settings can change every now and then, but if I tell them something needs doing, they know exactly what I mean. If the bike's not going very fast, I know it's not the bike, it's me. So, yeah, they're just real supportive. It's like a big family, really.
That's really lovely. You were over here then, you did the newcomers weekends, you had a few laps around, presumably in a car on open roads. How else do you prepare for an event like this?
Yeah, for me, the thing I found best was actually playing the game on the PlayStation. I must have racked up quite a few hours on that. From basically the November before, I was doing at least a lap every single night. So that's kind of what helped me learn it, really. And obviously watching the onboards and catching up with the old TT, like races and stuff. Yeah, just watching it all. But yeah, the game especially is what helped me.
What do you remember about finding out that you had actually got in?
Yeah, I remember me and my dad, we got the email, or maybe I checked the app, and I thought, oh my God, this is actually happening. It's go time.
So what happens after that then? I mean, obviously that's the first stage, but there's quite a lot else to go through.
Yeah, so it's well, first of all, it's trying to pull a bit of money together. Obviously, it's not cheap getting over there and getting it all done. But yeah, getting the money together, getting a plan, and then working on, like, you know, general fitness and just keeping the homework up, really. Once you've got in, it doesn't end there. But that's basically where it starts.
So even though you're with Cowton Racing, do you still have to find other sponsorship as well?
Yeah, so they've got their own sponsors, which, you know, obviously helps them, because Fran does work a little bit, but he's basically retired. So whatever money he can get in obviously helps the team. But obviously I've got my own sponsors. My personal title sponsor is Rosa Caravan and Camping Park. So that's Neil here in Scarborough. And we've got quite a few other people, like Tim Shields. He's got T-Shields Transport. And then my levers guy, that's Riz. That's Aaron Levers. But yeah, I've got loads of guys helping me out make all this work, really.
And I have been talking to a fellow newcomer at the MGP 2025 this year, Eddie Wormald, who actually is also in sales as well. And I asked him whether he thought that gave him a little bit of an advantage when it came to sort of selling yourself to sponsors. He wasn't sure it did. What about you? How do you find having those sort of conversations and trying to encourage people to support you?
I probably agree with Eddie. It's probably quite the opposite. I hate having to ask people for money at the end of the day, but without doing that, you know, it doesn't really work. I'm definitely good at selling myself to people, you know, making it seem like it's a mutual advantage. But yeah, it's not the nicest feeling having to sell yourself. I'd much rather sell a product or a phone.
And when it comes to work, I mean, have you just had to use all your holidays to be able to do the racing?
Yeah, no holidays left. I've had to take some unpaid days as well, just to try and fit it all in. We've had quite a busy calendar this year. that's really why I'm still there, you know. Foam sales itself is not my career goal, but I really like the guys I work with, the jobs, you know, it's nice enough. But yeah, the time I can get off is really why I like the job.
And that's it, isn't it? Means to an end, I guess. And for anybody in this sport doing what you do and taking this route, I guess it would be fair to say you're probably not that money driven, apart from what you need to be able to get out there and race.
Yeah, I've not had any money to my name for quite a few years. I can probably date it back to when I started racing, I'd imagine.
So what about sort of social life outside of racing? Are you one that goes out quite a lot, or is it just everything is sort of pretty much bike focused?
Yeah, I mean, I've never really been a big drinker. I only really drink on special occasions in terms of going out. But yeah, bikes to me is, you know, that is my social life. All my good friends that I like to speak to, racing based really. You can't beat talking about bikes. That's just the best thing.
So you arrive then on the Isle of Man for Manx Grand Prix 2025. Talk us through those first few hours and days when you were here and getting set up and what that was like for you.
Yeah, it was a bit surreal really. It was like, right, we're here. It's time to put everything, you know, we spent all the hard work getting here. Just kind of enjoy it really. You've got to try and stay relaxed. But yeah, it's just nice to like chat to everyone. Everyone's there for the same reason. Everyone's helpful. Yeah, it's just everything's ready to go.
And you had that first lap, that speed controlled lap. Who are you behind?
I can't actually remember the name of the guy I was behind. It was a weird experience, that one. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be the first lap. I thought, oh, this is all right. But then as the speed picked up, I was like, all right, okay, this is what I was expecting. A bit of craziness.
And how do you manage that? Because your brain must be going at 100 miles an hour, let alone the machine. And there's so much to take in. And it's one thing, I guess, doing it on the game in the comfort of your own home. But actually being out there, seeing all the road furniture, the people on the hedges, it must just be like an assault on the senses.
Yeah, it was definitely overwhelming for the brain. But playing the game, I'd learned basically the entire track. The only thing I had to learn from then was where I need to be on the track and kind of what gears and, you know, when to put the throttle on. But yeah, I remember my first solo lap, I thought, right, this is just like the game, you know, left, right, just flowing around. It's quite peaceful, really, weirdly.
I believe you on that one. Really?
Yeah, it kind of comes to you and it's like, right, well, I know I'm here, I know I'm there, this is coming up next. But yeah, it definitely is a sigh of relief when you get to like the governor's dip and you're right, almost home.
And did you have a goal in mind? Was there something that you thought, I really want to do this on my first time out in the Isle of Man?
Yeah, so the plan getting there was, I want to leave the island with a 100 mile an hour lap. Luckily for me, I think I achieved that on my third solo lap. So that was, yeah, made up from there. Everything else was just a bonus.
Well, actually, you ended up doing over 106 miles an hour, I think. And I just want to talk about your finish in the junior MGP race, where you did do over 106 miles an hour. You ended up riding over a lap with a missing foot peg. What happened?
So yeah, just after Sarah's cottage, I clipped the right foot peg. And then by the time I'd gotten to Craignabar, it had fallen off on the second lap. And I remember just trying to put my foot down and it wouldn't, you know, it just kind of went to the floor. And I'm like, right, we've got no peg. I can't pull over. I need to get this finished. I want to get that finisher's medal at least. So yeah, it's a bit naughty of me really. I was trying to hide it from the marshals, but I really wanted to get that finish.
Were you having some sort of internal battle with yourself though? Because the sensible side of you must have been saying, just pull over, it's fine. Whereas, I don't know, is it your heart telling you to keep going?
Yeah, it was more, I didn't want to go into the paddock and tell Fran, you know, I've not finished. I wanted us all to walk away. You know, we've all finished. You know, Toby finished all his races. I just wanted it to be the perfect Manx. So I thought, better get it done. It wasn't as bad as it seems. It was tiring on my leg, but physically it was still, you know, controllable.
And just generally physically, I know we talked to a lot of people who are quite surprised at just how much it takes out of them. What was your experience?
I actually found that the TT course, it was less physically straining than I thought it was going to be. I feel like you get more tired if you're panicking and rushing around, but if you just go smoothly, it kind of comes to you. And I would actually say a race around Oliver's Mount is more difficult than doing a lap of the TT course.
That's really interesting, because how long is the Oliver's Mount one?
2.43 miles.
Right. I think I'd probably take that over 37 and three quarters, but I'll believe you, William. We'll go with that.
Yeah, but it's very start-stop. That's the big thing.
Okay. And I guess, yeah, it's just what you prefer. And I suppose that once you had completed MGP this year, you'd had all those conversations, and it must have been a really lovely atmosphere in the Cowton Racing tent, because there's obviously some great success, as you mentioned, Toby, on the podium twice as well. And just getting that support and those post-race conversations, what is it like in that atmosphere?
Yeah, it's just brilliant. You know, Fran is doing it because he loves the sport. and we're doing it to love the sport. When it all works out, it's just mint. You know, we all have big barbecues at the end of the night and chat about it. And yeah, it's just one big family. And to end this year the way the counting team did, it was just brilliant for all of us.
Is it weird to think that this time last year you didn't even know whether you were going to be doing it?
Yeah, definitely is. Someone actually asked me the last day I was on the island, you know, do I feel fulfilled? Unfortunately, I don't. I just want to get back and do it again.
And that's the thing, is it's a flipping long time until you're back there on the start line.
Yeah.
Lots of people are very quick to give advice to newcomers who are just starting out. And just thinking, William, about the people who are in the position that you were this time last year, they're wondering whether or not they're going to get an entry. What would you say would be the most useful piece of advice you could give them?
Just do your homework, really. The more you do, the better you'll go. And just stay relaxed. You go in there to have fun. You're not going there to win it. Milky, when we were doing the newcomers weekends, he was always saying, you know, you're not the stars of today, you're the stars of the future.
And what is the plan then for you? Obviously, we are getting to that winter period. You haven't got any holidays left, which is a little bit of a bummer. How do you spend these next few months?
Yeah, trying to pull some sponsors in, really. We do have a plan for next year. I can announce that I will be staying with Carlton Racing. What I'm doing exactly, that's not been announced yet and not also fully decided. But yeah, I will be staying with Carlton Racing. Just preparing, really, trying to keep bike fit, get some track days in when it's sunny. And yeah, I'll look for next year now.
But what a great year, though, because you also finished on the podium at the Cookstown 100 this year as a newcomer. You were also at Armoy for the first time. I think you got another podium there as well. So it must be just lovely to look back on what has been a successful 2025.
Yeah, this year really, really has been great for me, especially on my own 400s. That has been what I've been getting the podiums on. Results-wise, on the Super Twin, it doesn't look like I've particularly done much, but the progression I've made is great, and this is always going to be the learning year ready for next year.
And we talked a little bit about the things you do apart from riding a bike. Just taking back to a couple of weeks ago when you did a 10-kilometre run, William, in full motorcycle gear, including your helmet. I mean, the question has to be, why?
Yeah, so it's actually the third year I've done a running race in my kit. The first year I did a 5K and that almost wiped me out. There was almost no more me. And then the next year I decided, right, that was horrible, let's do a 10K instead. And that was actually not that bad. I did that during Storm Ashley. Made the suit very wet, but, you know, I wasn't as tired or as knackered as I thought I was going to be. So I thought, yeah, why not? We'll do it again this year. Try and raise a bit of money for the Yorkshire Air Ambulance. But I actually had a flu. I've been ill quite a few days. So it made it incredibly hard. But yeah, we got there in the end.
Oh my God, that sounds utterly hideous. You poor thing. I just can't imagine. I suppose if it had been raining, the helmet would have kept your hair dry. But yeah, I mean, that's phenomenal. How much money did you raise for the charity?
Yeah, in the end, we actually ended up raising over £600, which was great. So yeah, it's worked out pretty well.
Marathon next?
I don't think I could do a marathon. I think 10K is almost just about wiping me out. I might have to come up with a different idea, maybe climb a mountain or something.
Oh, there you go. You said it here first. That's what we want to see you doing next year. Obviously, all great things for social media, which is something I know that you're pretty keen on.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a big help. It's also more of a hobby for me. I do really enjoy doing that kind of stuff. Obviously, I've got my YouTube channel, which I do kind of like vlogs from the race weekends. And then, yeah, just general posting on Facebook and Instagram.
And what sort of reaction do you get to your vlogs?
Yeah, I feel like people enjoy them. To be honest, I kind of am only really doing it for me. I've to, you know, when I get to 40, 50, whatever, you think, oh yeah, this is what I did. Look back on it, because racers will get this, I think. But when I'm done with a race weekend, I can't really remember anything. I'm just that filled with adrenaline that I kind of forget it all. So I like to kind of relive it and rewatch it.
And what is the ultimate goal then?
The ultimate goal would be to win a race on the TT course. That would be what settles it for me. But apart from that, there is no goal. So let's keep doing it, keep having fun, keep progressing, just see where it goes.
And is TT on the horizon then, would you say?
Not just yet. I don't think I'm quite quick enough just yet. But yeah, I'm not someone who likes to rush things. I like to kind of take my time, learn it and then move on. I don't want to move up when I'm not ready, if you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. It is that sort of sport, isn't it? You just need to progress. But you have made huge strides in a really relatively short space of time. So it's really exciting to think about what next year is going to look like. We can't wait to see you back here. I have been thinking, obviously, it is coming up to Christmas. You've got your sheriff's hat. Are you going to be asking for a badge?
We do actually have badges. I do a sheriff's club. It's like a way fans, I guess, or friends can support me. So they do a bit of a club. Yeah, they do get a sheriff badge included in their little kit. You just have to find me on Facebook or Instagram, I guess. Message me and we can sort it out. It is opening up again next year, but I'm going to work on trying to get some cowboy hats as part of that club.
Amazing. Just give us your social media details so people know where to follow you.
Yeah, so Facebook, it's just my name, William Grant. And then on Instagram, it's william.grant9. And YouTube, again, it's just William Grant.
Wonderful. Well, it's been brilliant talking to you. I don't know why you didn't decide to do your 10K run dress as a sheriff. You could have had one of those blow-up horses. Maybe that's what to ask Father Christmas for.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Might have been a bit easier. Might consider that.
Maybe not climbing up in one of those. Anyway, we'll think about that. We can't wait to see what you do next time. William, been great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
William Grant, or the Sheriff as he's known to his friends, and all the details about how to get in touch with him on social media are on the podcast page, so do take a look at those. And again, it'd be great to see him back here on the Isle of Man in 2026, and also keep an eye out for what charity challenge he sets himself for the next year as well. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man. Do take a look at their website, see how maybe you could get involved over the next 12 months or so. And also we're supported by the Manx Motorcycle Club, which runs the Manx Grand Prix. Their website details are on the podcast page. If you'd like to give me a shout, bethsb@manxradio.com is the best email address. And if you like this podcast, do check out the Startline podcast. It's fairly new now, but there are a few episodes on there, all talking to people about why they want to do the MGP in 2026. We'll be following the progress of some of those riders over the next year. Until next time then, take care. Bye bye.